Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, the first of 2026. I'm Brian Dinovellis, and as always, I thank you for listening, sharing, and downloading the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast as we begin another year under our belts. Hey, hope you had a safe and celebratory New Year's Eve. Here's hoping that 2026 brings you joy, happiness, love, prosperity, not only in your personal lives, but also with your college basketball lives. If the ending of 2025 is any indication, then 2026 is looking pretty good, I might say. What are we talking about this week? Seton Hall storming back in the final 3.5 minutes to stun Marquette, and a career night for Stephon Payne, who was bringing the pain. As I tweeted out there, he was a royal pain in the ass for Marquette. Stephon Payne is becoming one of the jewels of the portal, one of the jewels in the transfer portal, just like Jaden Bediako was a couple of years ago. Shaheen Holloway has found a diamond in the rough. We'll talk about Seton Hall. We'll also talk about St. John's. They shook off a sluggish start on New Year's Eve to outscore Georgetown and break an 0-for-10. They had lost 10 straight games on New Year's Eve, but they got that monkey off their backs as the Hoyas got a heavy dose of Zubi Ejiofor, who nearly had a triple-double. And how about those UConn Huskies? They put a royal beating on Xavier. They hopped off the bus, Gus. Don't need to discuss much, because as soon as they walked into that gymnasium, the Huskies came out shooting, firing on all cylinders at both ends, and they showed just how good they are in a 23-point shellacking of Richard Pitino's Musketeers. Plus, we'll also talk some Princeton men's and women's hoops. The men snapped an 8-game losing streak, and I'll talk with Madison St. Rose, the senior out of Old Bridge, New Jersey. She has come back from a torn ACL, and she is tearing it up for the Tigers, who are ranked 25th in the country. And I really, really enjoyed this conversation. She is a delight, full of energy on and off the court. She is one heck of a basketball player, and you will enjoy this conversation, trust me. So stick around for all of that. We'll get to all of that and more in just a bit. But first, I want to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of Remax Revolution. Hey, it's a new year and a new attitude and a new way to find a home down the Jersey Shore, right? You might be looking for one or trying to sell yours. We'll give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. Truly one of the best real estate agents in New Jersey. Please tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, let's welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, for the first time, one of the great players ever in the state of New Jersey. As a matter of fact, from my own town of Old Bridge, New Jersey. She now stars for the Princeton women's basketball team, currently ranked number 25 in the country, senior guard Madison St. Rose. Maddie, nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Listen, I have been a fan of yours from afar because, you know, you growing up in Old Bridge, I saw you play middle school basketball. As my daughter Emmy likes to say, you know, she's a year older than you, but Emmy says, I played with Maddie. She didn't play with me. So I've seen you grow literally from, you know, a youth basketball star to where you are today. Very happy for you and all of your success. So let's talk about that success now at Princeton, because you guys are 25 in the country. You've won 10 games in a row. You're 12-1. How are things going?
Things are going really well. I mean, this has probably been the best non-conference season I've had so far with Princeton for my 4 years here. And I'm just enjoying basketball. Like, this is my last year here at Princeton, and I'm just playing with the people I love playing with and just having fun. That's all I can do when I'm on the court, is have fun.
And listen, last year was not fun for you. I want to talk more about this year, but I just feel like, the adversity that you faced, tearing your ACL 4 games into the season last year, big things were expected. What was that like for you, that moment, and going through that agony, that pain, and that season?
That was heartbreaking. I was super excited for junior year. I was announced the captain of the team. I felt like I was ready to help the team and lead them in any way that was needed. And then once I got hurt, I kind of felt like my life was just so disoriented because not only did it affect me not being able to play basketball for the rest of the season, but I also felt that injury throughout my daily life, like trying to get up, waking out of bed, trying to brush my teeth when I was just crutching around, couldn't even like walk around campus. I had to have like a scooter. So it was a life-changing injury. I mean, my perspective on basketball changed. My perspective on life changed a lot. So there was a lot of learning points, learning moments. But yeah.
Not easy for anyone to go through, right? You always, I'm sure you've seen teammates get injured. ACL is something that happens to every, not every athlete, but in every sport, I'm trying to say. But when it happens to you, it's different. So how much stronger are you for this?
I honestly grew a lot. I got so much stronger, especially just like mentally, physically. And I feel like it did prepare me a lot for this season. And I grew so much as a person and just learned how to appreciate what I have the opportunity to do. For example, playing basketball, like it was so quick for my season to get chipped away, for all the fun to get chipped away. So every single time I step on the court, I'm just so more grateful. And I just take every opportunity and play it to the best of my abilities, play as hard as I can, because I just always know that feeling in the back of my mind of like how long it took for me to get back on the court and all the pain I had to go through in order to get to this point. So.
Well, the team is better with you. There's no doubt about that. And like you said, 25th in the country. You've beaten teams like Georgia Tech, Penn State, Villanova, Seton Hall, Rutgers. That's pretty impressive.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, we were really excited for this season. I was really excited for this season. But like you said, they're a really good team. So I'm glad we came up with those wins. It was not easy, but we knew how to execute and we played together. We had a lot of close games, especially in the fourth quarter, and a lot of comebacks too. So it was just all like grittiness on the court at all times, and we just never gave up.
Yeah, the Penn State game stood out a little bit. 100-93, that was in the Bahamas, right?
Yes.
Pretty high scoring game. What happened
That
there?
was, I don't know. I think it was the sun, everyone was missing the sun. The California girls were in like living in paradise. So I think the sun really just brought us so much joy, and basketball was just an extra part of it again of just having fun and making shots. And yeah, I mean, 93 points is a lot of points to give up, but we did score 100 points, so that like overrides everything.
Yes, you did. I guess it's that vitamin D, huh?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. But you listen, that's to score 100 points. Princeton is the highest scoring team in the Ivy League. You're the best shooting team, the best 3-point shooting team. So this team is built on offense. How about that?
It is built on offense. We do like to pride ourselves on defense too. We're still working on our defense for sure, but I mean, our offensive game is definitely really strong right now. We have so many threats, 1 through 5, 1 through 11, especially people coming off the bench too. Like everyone has to be guarded, and if someone's left open, that's where we just take advantage. So that's a lucky part about Princeton basketball.
Yeah, no doubt. And what is it like playing for, a coach like Carla Berube, a UConn legend, and she was a terrific coach at Tufts, and now she's doing it at Princeton. She recruited you there. What is it like playing for Carla?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, Coach, she gives it her all in practices. We can see that she's passionate on the court, but at the same time, she's really fun. She's really loving. And yeah, I just really enjoy playing under her. She kind of gives off the same impression as my high school coach. It was really nice. It was really, really nice transition that, like, she works just as hard as I do on the court. And I would do anything to kind of prove to her that, like, your coaching technique is on point, and now it's just us players that have to execute it. So, yeah, I really just like playing it under her. She kind of like also just brings my game to light. She uses me in the best way possible to help the team out.
Yeah, you came in this as this heralded freshman. You were Ivy League, I believe you're Ivy League Freshman of the Year, and you've grown ever since then. Now facing this adversity of the torn ACL, you come back averaging a career best 17.1 points per game. But what also stood out to me, your assists are up over two a game, and your rebounds. You're a 5'10" guard. You're rebounding almost 5.5 rebounds a game. Where did you learn how to rebound like this?
I would give credit to Ellie Mitchell. I feel like so my freshman year, she was like, even sophomore year, she was like the rebounding machine. She averaged like 10 rebounds per game. So I feel like I kind of like leaned off a bit freshman and sophomore year. Doesn't mean I didn't rebound, but like she got everything. And sometimes I had just to get out of her way so I wouldn't collide with her. But I feel like just having that mentality that like getting those extra possessions, those rebounds also give me extra touches on the ball. It just makes me feel more involved and engaged in the game. So I feel like ever since she left, I felt like that role has to be fulfilled and I wanted to be a part of that. And I discovered in practice that I was actually really good at finding the ball and like getting rebounds and stuff. I'm a lot tougher than I think I am. So.
Okay. But it's a lot of, listen, there's kind of some math involved, some geometry, some physics of where the ball is shot and where do you anticipate it going, right?
100%. I mean, yeah, you start to learn a little bit of like new tricks and like we're positioning and where the ball might fall and just hoping to be in that area. Sometimes there is a lot of unlucky chances when you go into rebound and the ball just like doesn't go in any of your direction at all. And then it's just like, well, does this mean I'm going to keep rebounding or should I just stop? Because if I miss that one rebound, like I might not get it the second time again. But that's where my mentality comes in. Like, just I got to crash every single time because it's causing chaos somehow. And then sometimes I just end up with the ball.
Where do you get your energy from? I mean, you're such a delight to talk to over here and very well spoken. This energy, the energy that's coming from you, it's contagious, it seems.
Yeah, I would say it would come from my mom.
Okay.
Like, she is also very talkative. She would, when I was younger, she would kind of like prompt me to do like little interviews in the car, saying that one day when I get older, like I might be in these situations too. So it's good to start early. So yeah, I mean, my media definitely has gotten better over through the years as well. Like I've gotten used to talking to people and stuff like that, especially about basketball, but definitely from my mom. She's prepped me for these moments.
I love that. Mom had a vision. She's like, listen, I see big things for you, Maddie. Let's practice interviewing now, right? When did that start? How old were you?
Middle school, I would say.
Okay. Something big was happening, and here you are. Let's go back to high school a little bit. You were the first person ever. There's been a lot of great players in the state of New Jersey, and you were the first person ever to be named three-time NJ.com State Player of the Year. What does that mean?
Wow, I can't believe I actually accomplished that. It's been so long. But I mean, that just brings me back to a lot of like, just I'm reminiscing about, again, all the good days, all the days I would wake up at like 5 a.m. in the morning with my trainer. His name is Larry. And he was also just as dedicated as I am. Cause like to wake up that early just to train someone because he just believes in me, like that was all I can ask for. I think a lot of people were believing in me and they just saw my worth ethic and how much I just really loved the game. And yeah, I kept just showing up every single day. The days where I didn't want to train are the days where I definitely gotten better because that's what made me mentally strong. And yeah, I think that was definitely a big accomplishment in high school. And yeah, I'm just super proud of myself because like now looking back, like I accomplished more than like I probably would have looked over in high school. Like I always just wanted more, but
5 a.m. Not many people are waking up at 5 a.m. What was that like?
it was a lot. There was a lot of times when I woke up and I was like, wow, do I really want to do this? Like it would be right before school and then I would practice later. But just something in me again, like I only got the opportunity to play high school one time, so I just took the opportunity as it was granted, and I just showed up. And no matter how my body was feeling, like I just wanted to play, and I wanted to get better, and I just wanted to learn so much.
And it took you here to Princeton. You were an All-American at St. John Vianney, like I said, three-time state player of the year. What were your other options and why did you choose Princeton?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of many options from other like leagues such as like the Big Ten, ACC, like Big East. But I feel like Princeton was like I was getting recruited during COVID time, which I guess that was also a really big thing for me too, because I couldn't really go on a lot of official visits. I mean, I probably could have, but I decided to commit early. But my biggest thing was that I just wanted to kind of experienced the same culture that I did in at SJV. And I felt like I visited Princeton a couple of times. I met my players on the team that were my future teammates. And I don't know, I just felt like when I felt like I just gelled with like the team, the culture, like everything. They were obviously known for being the best team in the Ivy League. I love to win. So I just felt like I didn't really need to look at any other schools, and this place just fit the best for me. Also, who cannot like overlook the academics? Like, that's the best of both worlds, being able to win, but then also getting an amazing academic experience here at the number one university in the world. So it was
Well
amazing.
said. Well said. I listen, if Princeton came calling to me, I think I'd where do I sign, right? So what is your major?
Psychology.
Okay, what do you plan on doing with that?
So right now, I think it's really important to learn about people, the way how people think, feel, like act, because I mean, I'm interacting with people every single day in my life. And then hopefully, well, first, I'm definitely trying to play out after college. Like, I'm gonna try to take my basketball career as far as possible. Hopefully my body is still up to it after college basketball. But then afterwards, I want to take my psychology degree, and I want to work some in like business. I don't know
Okay.
what part of business yet, but I just feel like sports and business. I mean, not sports and business, but yeah, I would do want to work sports business, but like psychology and business, they mesh really well together.
Okay. All right. So definitely something in psychology, business related, even sport. Hey, how about a sports
Sports.
psychologist or something, right?
Exactly.
Those two go hand in hand. I mean, sports have been a big part of your life your whole life.
Yes, I agree. Definitely can't let it go too fast. I have to be involved somehow.
Right. Right. So tell me what it's like to be a student athlete at Princeton.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an adjustment first when coming out of high school. Like, even though St. John Vianney did prepare me, I took some like AP classes, college course classes, but it still was never the same because I had to learn to live by myself and to not always have my parents or my brother around to kind of help me, like guide me and give me reminders and stuff like that. So I felt like once I adjusted, then I felt like it was very easy to like adapt to like the academic realm of things, because of the sense that basketball, we have a very structured schedule. We always practice from 4:45 to 7, and then we have like lift in the morning. So in the time between, that's when I scheduled my classes. That's when I kind of scheduled like study periods, doing homework, all that stuff. So that kind of made like my basketball and like my academic life balance out a bit. But yeah, so it did take me a couple of years to finally figure out how to get the swing of things, but I finally got it now after 4 years, which is really nice.
Yeah, good for you. And toughest class. What's the toughest class you ever took at Princeton?
Ooh, I would say it's called SML, which is basically like statistics and coding. It's like a statistics and coding class, and I've never coded in my life. So that was something that was brand new to me, and I had to learn how to do it for my psychology degree because I am running an experiment. So yeah, that would be a hard one.
Okay. And you got through it. What'd you
Yes.
get in that class?
I got an
There you go. All right. Not surprising, right? You found a way to get through it and excel at it. I'm not surprised. So now let's bring it back full circle to the playing. You are coming up on a pretty cool milestone, Maddie. You're coming up on 1,000 points. Do you know how many points you have?
I think I'm 4 points away.
You are. You are. So as we record this podcast, before you play Penn, you are 4 points away. Have you thought about that at all before I just asked you the question?
I mean, it's pretty crazy to think about. Like, I haven't thought about it too much because I'm always just like locked into the game and like, again, just trying to win. But to score that many points, that's pretty cool. I mean, I think it's very cool when I see a lot of other like Division I athletes just like make that milestone. So it's just be part of that collection. It's pretty cool to think about.
Yeah, it is. It's a special group, and you, what makes it more special is, you missed basically your entire junior season. So here you are. Your hard work's paying off, Madison. Very, very happy for you. What are your goals the rest of the way as you open Ivy League play?
Yeah, I mean, to first go undefeated in Ivy League play, that would be really, really awesome. We've had a great start to the season, so I'm very confident that we can do that. And then also to like win the Ivy League tournament and play in March Madness. The furthest I've gotten in March Madness was the second round.
Yeah.
my freshman year. So hopefully this year we can make it to the Sweet 16. That would be very, very cool. But yeah, I have a lot of team goals first, and I feel like if I play the way I am playing now and bring that into the conference like season, I think then like personal accolades can also be added from there. So I'm very team oriented first, and just again like doing what I can to help the team win, help the team grow. We didn't win anything last year, so I also think like everyone else on my team is very motivated. Well, we need that ring back.
Yeah, last year you did not. Princeton did not win the Ivy League tournament. So, but you got the at-large bid, which was good.
Yes, exactly. We still made it to the tournament, which was awesome.
Right. But I think that hunger's there for this team
Oh,
to get the
100%.
automatic bid.
Yes, 100%. We're gritty, we're excited. We know that just because we're ranked doesn't mean that we can just lay back. Like there's still more goals. Like we can potentially, if we keep playing the way we're playing, we can move up in the rankings and just continue to prove that Princeton is a really good basketball program. We're not just only an academic team. I mean, so far the Ivy League has definitely like has started to grow in that way, and people are seeing us as good basketball players as well.
Yeah.
So that's really nice. We get the respect.
No doubt, no doubt. Three teams got in last year, which is pretty darn impressive for an Ivy League. And listen, I don't think anyone's overlooking Princeton or Madison St. Rose. So, congrats on the success so far. Best of luck in the Ivy League. I know there's a lot of people from Old Bridge rooting for you, including myself. So, thank you. It's been a pleasure, and best of luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was nice talking to you.
Man, she is good. Quite a player, quite a talent, Madison St. Rose. Keep an eye on those Princeton Tigers. They play Penn, who's off to a nice start. Of course, Harvard is the defending champion, and Columbia is not going to go away. They were the regular season champs last year. They were in the tournament. Harvard was in the tournament. Princeton was in the tournament. How many teams from the Ivy League will get in? We'll find out. But Princeton is the team to beat. Five starters average in double figures, the highest scoring team in the Ivy League, the highest in field goal percentage, the highest best 3-point shooting team. They can score in bunches. Carla Berube's team is off to a flying start, and we'll see if they can continue that trend with a win on January 3rd against Penn. All right, let's go around the tri-state now. Lots to talk about as we end 2025 and we have turned the calendar to 2026. And like I said earlier, if 2025 is any indication, then we're going to see some pretty darn good basketball here in the tri-state over the next coming months. And one of the surprise teams, certainly in the nation, not just the tri-state, but in the nation, is Seton Hall. That's where I want to begin. The Pirates were in trouble on December 30th. They were losing big time to Marquette. Marquette is a team that, look, they are well coached. We know Shaka Smart can coach. And it was a seesaw affair in the first half. But the second half, Marquette goes on a 16-0 run midway through that second half, surges ahead by 10 points. And really, they had Seton Hall on the brink. The Pirates were on the brink, and no matter what they did, Marquette seemed to be holding them off. But at the 4-minute timeout, something happened. Seton Hall found the switch. And over the last 3 minutes and 25 seconds, after Ben Gold hit a free throw, Seton Hall closed the game on a 13-0 run. They found it. They found it on defense. They found it on offense. They found their stroke. They found their swagger. And they stunned Marquette and ended up winning in impressive fashion on the road, 79-73. Marquette is not an easy place to play. It was the first time Seton Hall had won there since 2021. I should say December of 2020. That 2020-2021 season. And the Pirates did it in a variety of ways. Everyone on that team contributed. And Shaheen Holloway said it afterward in the post game and in the locker room. We saw the video. If you didn't see it on social media, he basically said, "Hey guys, we didn't play our best, but you know what? When Good teams, okay? Good teams win when they're not at their best. Good teams find a way to win, and the Pirates found a way to win. How'd they do it? Well, we begin with Stephan Paine, who has quickly become a force. And if you don't think he's one of the top three or four centers in the Big East, I would put him right up there, right behind Zubi Ejiofor. All right, I'd put him in the top three with what he is doing. It is, listen, he has had a double-double in two of his first three games in Big East play. He's averaging 16 rebounds, 16 rebounds in three Big East games. I know it's a small sampling, but the dude is grabbing it on the offensive end and the defensive end. He had 22 rebounds in this game, 11 on the offensive glass. Let me repeat that. 11 offensive rebounds for the big man. As a team, Marquette had 12 offensive rebounds. He basically matched what Marquette did on the offensive glass. And that is what kept Seton Hall in this game, because this was not a typical Seton Hall game. All right. Marquette took care of the ball. They were really prepared for this game. They were disciplined. They drove. They attacked Seton Hall. They had them on their heels. And I was like, man, Shaka Smart, great game plan. But in the end, it was Shaheen who outsmarted Shaka by going zone. They went to an extended 2-3 zone in that second half, and really stymied and stopped this Marquette offense. They couldn't drive. They were settling for long threes at the end of the shot clock, and they played right into the Pirates' hands. The Pirates got the rebounds, and then when they needed shots down the stretch, it was guys like Tawan Simpkins or Bud Clark, or how about Trey Parker getting fouled, hitting a three, and then hit all three free throws. But Payne was, he was the catalyst in what he did in this game. 14 points, 22 rebounds. Just Marquette could not do anything. And Marquette has some good bigs. I mean, we've seen Ben Gold give them problems in the past, and Royce Parham. I mean, he's a handful on offense and defense. So they have good guards. They have good bigs. And Chase Ross is one of the best offensive players in the conference. So I don't know why they haven't gotten it together, but they're going to win some games, okay? And without Payne, Seton Hall does not win this game. AJ Staton-McCray had an incredible first half with 14 points, but he didn't have it in the second half. And that's when Shaheen Holloway said, you know what? I'm going with the players down the stretch who are playing the best. And those guys made plays. Tawan Simpkins didn't have a point in the first half, but he did in the second half what AJ Staton-McCray did in the first half. And he scored all 11 of his points in the final 9 minutes of this game. He had key plays, as I mentioned, Trey Parker. How about Josh Rivera really coming into his own? This is a guy who kind of looked lost. He looked like a heavyweight prize fighter who was a little out of shape in the beginning of the season, but he's rounding into form. And the transfer from Fordham is accepting his role. He's flourishing the past three games, and his role off the bench had 10 points against Villanova, had another 8 points against Marquette in 13 minutes. Look, you get contributions like that from your bench, and Trey Parker with 8 points off the bench, and Tawan Simpkins with 11 off the bench. It doesn't matter, what you're getting from your starters. They're going to make up for that. So well done, Seton Hall. Excellent all-around team victory, one that was much needed. And they are now 12-2. They are 2-1. They righted the ship after that loss at home to Villanova. This is their best start since 2017, 2018. They are 12-2, 2-1 in conference play, and playing Shaheen Holloway basketball. This team is going to fight you. They are going to defend. They are going to block shots. They are the top shot blocking team in the Big East, and they are the team with the most steals in the Big East. Now, this was a game where they weren't getting steals, they weren't turning you over, but they found a way to win when they weren't at their best. And that is a great sign for the Pirates moving into 2026. Huge game coming up on Sunday at the Prudential Center at noon. We've seen Seton Hall and Creighton play some wild games. That triple overtime loss at the Prudential Center comes to mind. Creighton is a team like Villanova that shoots lots of threes. They're 3-0. Whatever happened to them in the non-conference, they've seemed to have righted their ship. They had a nice win at home against Butler. They won earlier. I think they won at Marquette, if I'm not mistaken. So Creighton's good. They shoot threes. It's offense versus defense. And we'll see, because if Seton Hall can win that game and get to 3-1, they're very much right there in the top four, which at this point should be a goal for this team. You're at home. Creighton is a team that's given you fits over the last several years. It's typically not a good matchup. But you know what? Seton Hall is not a good matchup for a lot of teams either. This is not a must-win. It's early January, but it's a win that could go, it's a game, if they win, that could go a long way in determining where they finish in conference play for sure. All right. This is a team that is in Creighton that's going to be there, like Villanova, like St. John's, battling for second, third, and fourth place in the conference. You're at home, win the game. A team that was on the road and won the game, New Year's Eve, was St. John's. Nice victory by the Johnnies in a game that, we've seen them get off to sluggish starts. Remember last year when, it was second half St. John's? We're not seeing so much second half St. John's, but we're seeing sluggish St. John's. And they overcame some shooting woes early in this game, and they did what I was screaming last podcast they need to do. Get the ball to the big man. Rick Pitino knew that. Rick Pitino knew that they had to get the ball to Zubi Adjafor, and he's been preaching for days. Zubi Adjafor should not be a guy that takes six shots, eight shots, all right? If St. John's is going to play like their preseason billing, couple of things. They have to defend better, which they're getting better. They have to continue to find, and develop the emergence of Ian Jackson at point guard. Baby steps there. But to me, their offense needs to go inside out. It's not rocket science. When you have the Big East player of the year, the Big East preseason player of the year, he should get touches. And I think what you saw in this game was a blueprint for success moving forward. It's no secret that Zubi had his best game of the season, all right, because he had the touches, he had the opportunities, he was getting the ball in position to score or pass. And when he's scoring, Rick Pitino said it in his post-game press conference, everything else opens up around. And you saw St. John's hit a program record tying 15 threes. 15 for 27 from three. Ozias Sellers, welcome back. Four threes. Ian Jackson shot the ball really well. Four threes. Dylan Darling continues to, reinvent himself after he went back in there and fixed his shot. Three threes. Josan Sanan, three threes. So Pitino pushed all the right buttons. Really nice road win against a Georgetown team that is young and talented. And it was St. John's depth. It was St. John's, age, their experience. Guys like Zubi, who nearly had a triple double. If he wasn't in foul trouble, he might have had it. Just a monster game. Like I said, his best all around game. 25 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. Bryce Hopkins, nice all-around game as well. Didn't score, but had 8 points, 10 rebounds, and was a catalyst. He was brought into the post-game press conference afterward, which shows you that Rick Pitino is really working his tail off to get Bryce Hopkins going. And even if Bryce didn't score, he doesn't have to score. We're seeing him rebound and defend. That's a huge sign. But again, this win goes back to St. John's and the players realizing we need Zubi. Let's feed him early, and everything else will open up. Here's Pitino after the game.
Zubi is not playing as well as he did last year. And I'm going to tell you why. Because last year's team got him the ball. Zubi's better than he was last year, and you're not getting him the ball. And we start getting him the ball in practice, and it just freed up so many of our shooters by getting him the ball. So I think they learned the most valuable lesson is when you feed Zubi, great things happen. Not only he scored, but he's willing to give it up as well. So we became a much better offensive team by working inside to out and taking our great player and making sure that he gets it.
Yeah, I'm not saying St. John's is going to hit 15 threes every game. All right. They might not do that the rest of the year, but why shouldn't they hit 8 to 10 threes every game? They have the guys that can do it. Now, Rick Pitino also said in his post-game press conference, he's always needling guys. And he'll praise you 1 second and he'll throw you under the bus the next. And while he's still trying to light a fire under Bryce Hopkins, that's working. He's still calling out guys like Ian Jackson and Josan Sanin to play better defense. We've seen it on the offensive end. Jackson is taking better care of the ball. There's no doubt about that. But, the turnovers and the defense need to get better for St. John's. You just should not give up 83 points, okay? St. John's will outscore a lot of teams. But we saw earlier this year, they didn't outscore Alabama, right? They didn't outscore Kentucky. They can score, but when they need to get the stops, will they be able to? So the defense needs to get better. Ian Jackson continued to show growth since he's been reinserted into the starting lineup. St. John's has played better. He's played better. I believe that Dylan Darling, as Rick Pitino has said, he was brought in here to be a backup. He should not be the starter. He deserves minutes. He's showing his value for this team. There are so many guys on his team. They are so deep. So deep. We didn't even talk about Ruben Pray. He didn't have it in this game, but he is a factor as well. This team goes 9 deep, 10 deep at times. They can score. The defense needs to get better. Rick Pitino knows it. The Johnnies know it. This was an important stretch for St. John's. They were coming out of Christmas break on the road, New Year's Eve, 8 o'clock tip-off against a Georgetown team coached by Ed Cooley. You knew that they were going to be tough. They showed some fortitude and some guts coming back and taking control of this game. This was a game that if St. John's wants to go where they want to go, right? They want to go to the NCAA tournament. They want to challenge in the Big East. They want to get to a Sweet 16. Beat a team like Georgetown on the road because then they have Providence at home and then they're at Butler, at Creighton. Those are two tricky games on the road. All right. They could easily lose both, but you see where I'm going here. All right. This was a stretch where you have to win. You have 3 of 4 on the road, and you have to win two of those games. Two. They beat Georgetown. They should take care of Providence at home on Sunday and then split Butler or Creighton. If they win both of those, now we're talking about a streak. Now we're talking about a 4-game winning streak in the Big East, and St. John's is going to be to a point where you're like, oh, okay, something's brewing here, right? So that's the schedule that you were looking at with the Johnnies. That's why, to me, this game was important. Take care of business at home against Providence. Bury that team. You're at the Garden. And then take your chances on the road. So, important win for St. John's. They look good. Seton Hall look good. And UConn look damn good. Boy, did they absolutely bury Xavier in this game. UConn came out in a flurry. Xavier didn't know what hit them. UConn never trailed in this game. They came out hitting threes. They hit, I think, three or four threes in the first 4 minutes of this game. They jumped out 14-4. They jumped out 32-6. And from there, they never looked back. Xavier, I think they, you know, whatever they cut it to before the half, you know, they got in a little momentum, but really, UConn controlled 90 to 95% of this game. And to me, you're getting scoring from a variety of players with UConn. And let's begin with Alex Caravan, because as much as I ripped him last year, and rightfully so, he was not Alex Caravan. He was not the player we saw in the first 2 years. Couldn't find his shot, lacked confidence. He is the complete opposite. He is playing like, to me, the Big East player of the year. He is the best player on the best team in the conference. That will typically get you awards at the end of the year. That will get you individual hardware, and he knows that. But he is the ultimate team player. He is a guy who is not going to, you know, wow you by scoring in bunches and, you know, getting 30 points. He doesn't need to do that. But his stroke is back. It's smooth. Last year, it looked awful coming out of his hands. This year, it looks pure coming out of his hands. 19 points, hit three threes in this game, seven rebounds, great all-around effort. Had high praise from Dan Hurley after the game, called him Captain America. Here's Hurley.
He's been a Big East player of the year. You know, he's been All-American level player for us this year. And, you know, just another typical Alex Caravan, you know, 18 points, seven rebounds, four assists, two steals and a block. The most underappreciated, great player, All-American level player in college basketball. Captain America.
Thank you, Bobby.
Yeah. Open up that shirt. Show that S. He's been Superman. But there have been a lot of guys on this team who have taken the role of Superman at different times. Solo Ball is a guy who we saw struggled with his shot for many games. He seems to be out of that slump. Still not shooting great, but the ball looks better going out of his hands. He had 17 points, and he had one key stretch in this game where at one end, he did a little pick and roll with Eric Riba. Riba rolled to the hoop, and Ball gave him a nice alley-oop that Riba laid in. Then at the other end, here comes Xavier. Ball blocks the shot, takes it in transition, goes coast to coast, gets the and one and the layup. An incredible athletic sequence, getting the assist, the block, the and one, NBA type of stuff by Solo Ball. And you saw it all in one sequence. He had a very good game, was doing it all for this team. And then there's Braylon Mullins. If you've heard me on this podcast, you've heard me say a lot of good things about this kid. He is just beginning to scratch the surface of what this McDonald's All-American can do on the court. He's got one of the quickest releases I've seen. His shot is so pure. It's going to get better. You can see it. They run plays for him. Just watch him move off the ball. Watch him come around screens. It's fun to watch. And Terrace Reed and Riba and Caravan, they're setting screens all over the place. And Braylon Mullins is a guy who could be a lottery pick, certainly could be a first-round pick. There's no doubt about that. I think he needs to get a little stronger. The shot is getting there. And what we saw is probably the beginning of Mullins coming of age at UConn. He missed a lot of the preseason, just like Steph Castle did. The trajectory is there. When Steph Castle was a freshman, remember, he missed a lot of time. It took him several games into, you know, the middle of January months to really start to see what he could do. And Braylon Mullins is on a very similar trajectory based off of his preseason injury. Career highs in this game, 17 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, hit 5 for 10 from 3. You have a freshman taking 10 threes, all right? That tells me two things. Number one, the kid is confident. He knows he can hit them. And number two, the coaching staff is calling plays for him because they know he can do it. So it's very impressive, all right? I'm not making him out to be, the number one overall pick in the draft, but this kid's career is on an upward trajectory. His season is on an upward trajectory. UConn is on an upward trajectory. This team is a wagon, and it's time to start projecting how many wins this team is going to get in the Big East, because they are headed for a record pace. We talked about this previously, but as we turn the page to 2026, UConn is 3-0 in the Big East. They are looking at minimum 17 wins in conference. That's where I would put the over-under at this point in time. All right, put the over-under at 17. I'm going to say this team is going 18-2. All right, if they go 19-1, this is a team that can do it. Why? Because they are that good. They are Final Four national championship good, and the rest of the conference is down. Maybe St. John's can get back to where we thought they could be. But when you look at the other teams in this conference, just look at the net. It doesn't match to where it used to be. So you put all that together, and it could be an historic year for UConn. 18-2 is the benchmark. UConn has done it. 19-1, gun to my head right now, I'm saying they're going 18-2 minimum. I would even put money on 19-1. 20-0, I mean, obviously that would be historic in the Big East. And not many teams in major conferences ever do numbers like that. We saw it last year in the Big 12. All right, Houston, a team that really could have won and maybe should have won a national championship. They went 19-1 in the Big 12. I think UConn can do that this year. I really do. 19-1 in the Big East. But 20-0, undefeated? I don't know if any team in the history of college basketball, because of the way conference configuration is, has ever gone 20-0. I don't think so. Remember that Kentucky team that fell short, that fell to Wisconsin in the Final Four in 2015? That's a team that comes to mind. That team was undefeated in the SEC. That team was undefeated going into the Final Four. Willie Cauley-Stein, Devin Harris was on that team. Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, damn, that was a good team. They went undefeated, I think, at 18-0 in the SEC. But 20-0, I don't think that's ever been done. That would be historic. They're going 18-2. And maybe going 19-1. That's how good this team is. And when you share the ball the way they do, there are no egos on this team. Just look at what they do. Watch the way they pass the ball. They're always, always looking for the open man, always making the extra pass. Rarely do you see them force a shot. They run the offense to precision. You have Alex Caravan running these high pick and rolls. I mean, just watch it. You don't know if he's popping out for a three or he's ducking under for a layup. And he does it so smoothly and effortlessly. And they know what he's going to do before he does it. They had 26 assists on 33 made field goals against Xavier. Let me repeat that. 26 assists on 33 made field goals. If that doesn't tell you how unselfish this team is, and they're doing it night in and night out, then, you know, I don't know what is. But we are looking at an historic season for UConn in the Big East. Enjoy it. Get to a game. Watch this team. They're that good. And unfortunately, the rest of the Big East has to catch up. Or else, you know, we could be looking at UConn carrying the torch again for this conference. But I think there are teams that will. I think at the end of the year, I think you'll see St. John's be there. I think you'll see Seton Hall be there. I think you'll see Villanova be there. Maybe Creighton there, trending in that direction. And maybe even Butler. Those are the teams that will be fighting for an NCAA tournament berth in this conference. But UConn is the top dog, and it's going to be tough to knock them off. They will play Marquette at home on Sunday in stores. That should be a win. Marquette is looking at 0-4 to start Big East play, and nobody had that. Trust me. And the last team I want to talk about are the Princeton Tigers. We haven't talked about Princeton on this show that much this year at all. Why? Because it has been a historically horrific November and December for this team. Now, part of it is they lost arguably the top two players in the Ivy League before the season started, right? In the offseason, Xavier Lee goes to Florida, and Caden Pierce announces that he's taking a gap year. He'll finish his Princeton education, and he's a free agent. And oh, by the way, UConn is very much in the mix. Purdue in the mix. Kansas in the mix. But UConn is hot and heavy for Caden Pierce. How cool would that be for us to get one more year of Caden Pierce in the tri-state? So right away, they lose their top two players. Dalen Davis, their leading scorer, has missed the last 8 or 9 games with an injury. So that's been tough. The team goes into a tailspin. They were 3-3 to start the year. They lost 8 straight games, and nothing was going right for this team. They couldn't shoot. They couldn't defend. But this game against Vermont, maybe this is the get-right game. They beat Vermont in overtime in a game where they were leading for most of the game, and they gave up the lead late, and the game goes into overtime. But what happened was they were not going to lose this game. They were the tougher team in overtime. They were the stronger team in overtime. This Vermont team, oh, by the way, had beaten Princeton earlier this year. So it's one of those fluky things where you play a team twice in the same year out of conference. They played in the tournament, the ESPN Events Invitational in Florida. And Vermont won that game, I believe, by 5. And it was an opportunity where a fluke, really, in the scheduling, because of the way things shaped out in the tournament, where they had already scheduled this game. So Vermont's a team that's always going to contend. And if you've heard me on this podcast, I've talked about them a little bit because they have a former Seton Hall player, Gus Yeldon, who failed at Wisconsin miserably. Didn't find his way at Seton Hall, and has certainly discovered his game and his self at Vermont. Burlington, Vermont is the home of Gus Yeldon. He's averaging 17 points a game for the Catamounts, their leading scorer. Well, he did some Gus Bus things, all right? He had 14 points. He had 5 rebounds, but he got injured late in this game. Might have been cramping, something to his lower leg. And left with about 4 minutes left in regulation, never came back. Was it a factor in the game? Sure, sure. But I think that Princeton was so sick and tired of losing that guys like Jack Stanton, guys like Malik Abdullahi, and Jackson Hickey were not going to be denied. They had four players in double figures. Jack Stanton, career high 19 points, was brilliant. Hit five threes in this game. Jackson Hickey did a little bit of everything with 17 points, six rebounds, five assists. Malik Abdullahi had 15 points. And how about the freshman, Landon Clark, set a new career high with 12 points, had 18 rebounds, a complete team effort for Mitch Henderson's team. It shouldn't be long before Davis gets healthy. Right when Ivy League play begins, they have Penn right out of the gate. That is an important game, and a game that if Princeton can win and continue their dominance over Penn, then maybe you start to believe. Because let's face it, the Ivy League is a one-bid league in men's basketball. The preseason, as awful as it's been, you get healthy, you start to gain confidence, you start to gel as a team. All you have to do is get into the top four and get into Ivy League madness. And all you have to do is win two games. So that is the goal for Princeton. Get to the final, the top four. Princeton has won the last 13 matchups with Penn. Penn has not beaten Princeton since 2018. 13 straight wins. Now, Penn is better. We saw them take Rutgers to the brink, and they should have won that game. They didn't close it out. If not for the heroics of Tariq Francis, who had a career night in that game and hit a three with basically, you know, no time left on the shot clock to pull Rutgers from the clutches of defeat and send them to a victory over Penn. This Penn team is good. It's different. But if Princeton wants to get into the top four, make it 14 in a row. Beat Penn, and then you have Yale coming into your place, and who knows, right? Yale will be favored, but who knows? All right, so good for Princeton. Reports of their death have been greatly exaggerated. This team's getting healthy, and they're playing well. Well, one game at least they're playing well. Let's see if they carry that momentum into Ivy League play with a win over Penn on Monday, January 5th. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. What an end to 2025. It brings hope for 2026. It is good to be back. It is good to have you listening. Please continue to share, download, and also give us a review wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get them. Don't forget to give us a review and keep telling your friends about us. Until next time, my name is Brian Dean Avellis. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long.